Welcome back, one and all, to another day, another show of The Damage Report. I'm John Arola, as always, but not as always, but always nice when it happens. We are joined on today's show by stand-up comedian, actor, host, writer, podcast host, probably additional things as well. River Butcher, welcome back to the show.
Oh my God, John, so good to be here. Also, utility infielder.
Utility, that's important.
Co-manager.
I'm not big into the sports. I always sure. leave those ones off, but, but those right. are important credits and hard earned.
Thank you. Yes. Very hard earned. I'm loving the hair, John. Earned. You look great today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. I never know when I've never had hair really, aside from an ill-fated freshman year in college. Mm. So I never know on a daily basis what it's gonna do. Yeah. I'm in for the ride like everyone else, but thank you though.
Oh,
you
yeah,
look
it looks
wonderful
great.
As always. Thank Rocking you. I appreciate it.
Thank
that.
Thank you, my friend.
Very glad to have you on. We've got a lot to talk about, not only way more details as well as reactions to the tragic shooting in Nashville yesterday. We're gonna be giving you updates on that. The actual first initial details were coming out live on our show yesterday. So now we have a little bit more information. We have Fox News's desperate attempts to protect Donald Trump that he is actively undercutting at every opportunity. So that'll be fun. We'll talk a little bit about how major companies buying up huge swaths of real estate in individual cities is having a really bad effect on the cost of housing there. And then a whole lot more besides. We're gonna talk about the Puffy Pope, one of my favorite stories of the day. What the hell is going on with Twitter? Because a lot is right now. And in the aftermath, it is sad, but I do have to report that Dolly Parton has now been canceled. So we're gonna give you the details on that coming up very soon. But in advance of all of that, please hit the like button, share the stream. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, super chats, anything like that, River and I would love to see your comments, answer your questions, and give you a chance at winning a $100 Blue Apron gift card for particularly good comments. So get those in, we'll respond as we go. But as regrettable as it is to start off with this devastating news, River, are you ready to start this thing?
I am ready to start this thing.
Okay, then in that case, let's jump into it. We now know far more about the devastating school shooting that happened just yesterday. Heavily armed assailant wielding three different guns shot six people, including three children at a private elementary school. The attacker was eventually shot dead by police. And although not all of the identities of those who were slain has been released, I do want to acknowledge the human toll of this tragedy. Here are three of the victims, Catherine Kuntz, Mike Hill, and Haley Scruggs. William Kinney and Evelyn Dykos, as well as Cynthia Peake, were also shot. I don't believe that any photos of them have been released. They are the three individuals, human beings, tragically taken long before their time as a result of America. And I'll just say that broadly. You know, it's a combination of our politics and our media, our rhetoric, our culture, our society, all of what we have allowed to happen or been forced to watch to happen has once again produced a toll that you can measure in people taken from their families, from their friends, and those are just three, and then six in total. As I alluded to, we didn't know exactly what weapons had been used yesterday when we were talking about this, but we now know that it was an assault style rifle, an assault style pistol, and another pistol as well. In fact, the Metro Nashville PD has put out photos of the guns. You can see them here. And so if anyone would like to, we can have another pointless debate about whether the type of gun matters. And I can weigh in on it, and maybe people in the audience can weigh in on it. But the thing is that the mass shooters have already weighed in on it, and they think it matters because whenever they can, they get these guns to make their job as easy as possible. Over and over and over again, it has become indisputable that they definitely think the type of gun matters. So anyway, we're gonna get into a little bit more of a look of how much of this sort of violence we've already had this year, as well as some of the attempts by the right wing to once again distract from the actual issue, which is the guns. We're gonna get to that. But River, I wanted your initial thoughts.
I mean, I just wanna echo, John, what you said, that there is, you know, a human toll, that lives have been lost and taken. And that these are like souls, you know. Ernest Shackleton, I think, in the late 1800s, spoke of the change in American media during wartime, that we shifted in our language from casualties to sacrifice. And I think that while over 100 years ago speaks to what our society now sees this all as though these people were just a sacrifice of our freedoms. And I just don't think that has to be true. You know, I don't believe that has to be true. And some people do, but I hope that, I don't know how many more, you know, how many more wars, how many more children in this school, in this country, in schools in the Middle East, across the globe, how many children do we have to lose? And how many people caring for those children do we have to lose for someone to actually sacrifice what they believe is the freedom for someone else's life?
Yeah.
Because that's where we're at.
Yeah. I don't know the number. My guess would be a whole hell of a lot would be my guess. Because this is, you know, this is devastating for a lot of reasons. In the context of 2023, it's one of the worst individual school-based mass shootings we've had. You have to be very specific in America when it comes to mass gun violence. Because if you speak broadly, then there's just way too many examples. But we can say that, again, all this depends on how you define it. There have been more mass shootings in 2023 so far at this point than in any year since at least 2013. 130 mass shootings this year. And I'll remind you, Christmas was like a week ago. We just started this thing and already we're ahead of the curve. There have been 13 school shootings that resulted in death or injury. There have been other school shootings where no one died, thankfully. We don't even count those. That's just a gun goes off in a school, who cares? There have been 13 where someone actually was injured or died. And for our international audience, or for, you know, maybe some American viewers who aren't that aware of what happens in other countries or how things go in other countries, no other developed nation, I will remind you, has mass shootings at the same scale or frequency as the US. Some will have individual instances of gun violence that are particularly tragic. I believe you can see on that a few years ago in France. Sometimes something like that will happen, but it is a constant in America. And there are certainly things that make America distinct from other countries, but not generally the things that the right will focus on in the wake of these shootings, as we'll get to. Mental illness is a problem in America. You know where else it's a problem? Literally everywhere there are humans, because it's a natural part of the human experience. It's something that needs to be managed and hopefully destigmatized. That is not something that is uniquely American. There are things that are somewhat uniquely American. Our particular formulation of media, particularly right-wing media, is no longer as unique internationally as it used to be. But certainly the way that we talk about guns, the guns that are available, the encouragement to have an arsenal, all of this, gun culture writ large. There are countries that have a lot of guns. There are countries that have permissive gun laws. There is no country quite like America, though, when it comes to guns. And I don't know. I think maybe that has something to do with it. Or what are your thoughts?
I agree. I mean, I think that just to flip a perspective only slightly is that, like as you said, mental illness is not an America specific thing. It is a human specific thing we are all affected by. But mental health care, and just health care, because mental health care is health care, and the lack of it, period, whether that's access or just the existence of it, is an American issue. And to me is on purpose. We are awash in firearms, but not in healthcare. You know, I know veterans who have to wait in line for months to talk to somebody. This is an American issue. And at this point, I believe it's on purpose to keep us in this cycle and politicized and afraid of each other and buying up guns because we're afraid of guns. We think the only solution to more guns is more guns. So, and not, you know, healthcare for everyone and safe schools and safe places. You know, the fact that people have now politicized a place you can walk into and not fear for your life somehow makes you weak. You know, it's a twisted logic that we have here in the States that we're now exporting everywhere. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not sure.
100%. Yeah. No, their suggestion is always going to be more guns. We're going to get to it soon. Always. And look, I think for multiple reasons. I mean, definitely because they are paid by the gun lobby. never forget that, like, although it used to be a thing where the right wingers would like pretend to be like agree, like this is a tragedy. And they maybe wouldn't post about guns for like 48 hours or something. We're past that. They don't even need to pretend anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't care when kids get blown to pieces. They just don't. Or to the extent that they care, it is so far down the list of their priorities that it might as well not even be there. The culture war aspect of being seen to be a defender of guns, as River was saying, playing into a constant fear at literally everything that guns is very useful in getting people to feel. All of that is just way more important to them than whether a kid's head gets blown off with an AR-15 or 10 or 100 or 1,000 kids' heads get blown off with AR-15s. That is just the truth at this point. Now, I want to turn to, we're talking about why we think these things happen and what could potentially, we're hinting at what we think could be done to stop it. The right, as always, to the extent that they're going to talk about these things at all, and when they do, it's only because the media forces them to. They would ignore every one of these shootings if they could. They're going to come up with excuses. Some of them are the same as always. Some are distinctive to this particular shooting. So let's start to run through a few. I think pretty much everyone, the second they heard that there was a chance that the Nashville shooter might be trans, they knew, well, that's it. That's all the right wing is going to care about. And that has largely come to pass. Maybe moments later, Marjorie Greene was tweeting things like this. And I'm gonna read this tweet, but I'm going to say that I already feel sick even having to briefly have Marjorie Greene's words inhabit my mouth. How much hormones like testosterone and medications for mental illness was the transgender Nashville school shooter taking? Everyone can stop blaming guns now. You know, sometimes when you take a particularly ignorant, a moronic right winger, just filled with hatred and cruelty or whatever, and you don't hear them speaking, it can cloak the hatred, the cruelty, and the ignorance. I would like to give credit to Marjorie Greene for making sure that she can't cloak it in any format, literally just a tweet. It is clear how stupid she is, how hateful she is, how clear a strategy is. She literally says everyone can stop blaming guns now. So she is happy to take up transphobia as a convenient thing to distract from the actual guns that are killing people. You can't kill anyone with transgenderism. That's not a thing that is fatal. ARs are fatal. That's why people pick them up and use them when they try to gun people down. And so while there's a lot of back and forth in the media about questions of gender identity for the shooter, and a lot of people are talking in very different ways about it, for Marjorie Greene, it is obvious that this is nothing but a convenient thing to focus on to distract from guns and probably also throw fuel on the fire of the anti-trans war that the right wing has been waging for multiple years. River, what do you think?
I mean, she is just really good at finding whatever convenient story she needs to hit as many bingo squares in her sort of, mission to just be the star of the right. As soon as I saw that this person was using a different name online, I was like, okay, you know. To me, this is just like, if that is the case, and I don't know, it's hard to speculate, just because somebody's using a different name online does not mean that they're trans. And even if they are, they're a human being living in America where they're also being persecuted on a daily basis. I don't want to get into the weeds of all of it because I don't know. I don't know. But
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. And so it's, you know, that's the sad thing that I've thought for years is we as a country would rather wait to diversify our school shootings than do something about the guns, the firearms. Mm-hmm. You know, we would rather wait until women, trans people, people of color are, and that's happening. It's happening. We're so awash in high capacity firearms. Because for me, that is the issue. You know, we don't actually have to get into a Second Amendment debate. We could actually just talk about high capacity and the fact that that is the rise in mass shootings is high capacity firearms. that there's just no getting around it. You talk about a handgun, someone can take that person down a lot faster. And it sucks to be like, well, let's see how far we can get with this. But that is actually, the person being trans is not the issue. The person being, you know, toxic masculinity, sure, yes, that's a thing we need to discuss. But the issue is high capacity firearms and yeah. how awash we, this is a child with their hands on multiples. Multiples. Yeah. That is the issue, and they will do anything to distract from that. Because you look at any of the recent shootings that are, for all intents and purposes, straight, white, cisgender, young men. And conveniently, there's no politics for them to talk about at that point. They in fact say, don't politicize this.
Yep.
So, okay, let's not. It is about high capacity firearms. That's what it's about. And we can have a reasoned discussion about how to move forward about this.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, isn't it amazing how quickly identity can matter when it has never mattered to them before?
Yeah.
What are we gonna bet? Is it 99% of school shooters have been cis white men? Is it 95? Is it 99? I don't know. It's somewhere around there. That has never mattered to her. Or to any right winger, that identity has never been. When they literally write their politics down in a manifesto, it doesn't matter. So interesting when all of a sudden identity does care. And by the way, I just want to dig just briefly into some of the things that she said there, and bear in mind that there's a lot of hatred there. So by the way, so she thinks, you'll notice, she, first of all, automatically conflates being transgender with a mental illness, just natural transphobia that she's going to throw in there, but then says, it isn't, look at how they think about their idea of mental illness. It isn't that the person has mental illness. It's in her mind that they might have been treating it with medication. The mental illness to her is not the problem. It's medication being available to deal with mental illness is how she would present it. And I would also remind you, by the way, let's say that you accept all of the hateful transphobia from Marjorie Greene, that you have these people that, how could we possibly have them going around? She wants them to be able to buy AR still. But to be very clear, she thinks they're dangerous and mentally ill and should be able to buy military weapons of war. So again, like, it is amazing the argument that she seems to be making and then actually isn't. And I will say that I might be wrong, only because these people in the last 40 years haven't found a single instance in which they think a gun should be stopped from being purchased. The last time was when the Black Panthers wanted to use them. They didn't think it was a good idea then. And you are beginning to see the brewings of, well, maybe gun control is a good thing, but only for people that we define as being trans. So we'll see if that continues. We've been seeing the beginning whisperings of that. We'll see if there's more. I do want to give a response to Marjorie Greene. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was reached out to about this. And she said it's absolutely disgusting. And she should be looking into a mirror as to why she's defending and posing with the same weapons that are being used to kill children, teachers, and educators. It's not about, well, and this is to go on to Marjorie Greene, who I will remind you went to DC to stalk and harass the survivor of a mass shooting, give you an idea of how cruel and horrible this person is. She says it's not about their identity when she is 100% trying to make it about their identity. It's the questions, or this is what kind of hormones are they on? What kind of medications are they taking for mental illness? What is causing this aggression in this biological female who identifies as a male for them to go in and murder children? So obviously a lot of transphobia and hatred in there. But again, now she cares a little bit. The hatred that would lead a cis white male, you know, by the dozens and dozens to do it, not interested in that, doesn't care at all, and thinks that they should be able to get access to the guns as well, by the way. But all of a sudden, very interested in finding out what medications and when and why and how and all of this stuff. We knew it was gonna come, River. I just hate it.
Yeah, I mean, interesting, we're not talking about the hormone levels of like cis males that do this. Again, and these two, not to pit these us against each other. I mean, that's the point, right? Like somehow this person would have been, it would have been all right if she was not. And we don't even know that this person is trans or doing any of this. It is just, mm-hmm. it is just a convenient scapegoat yeah. for people, for us to not talk about the fact that a child, no matter what, has at this point unrestricted access to high capacity firearms.
Yeah.
And is living in a country that has our tolerance for violence has been lowered and lowered and lowered, or raised and raised and raised over. I am 40 years old. When Columbine happened, it was like the earth stood still.
Yeah.
We could not believe. And now that is an almost daily occurrence.
Yeah.
It's
amazing what can be normalized.
Absolutely. Anything in America except for healthcare.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Getting access to it, yeah.
Yeah. Healthcare, social security net, like literally anything that helps people.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna come back and give you a little bit more of the attempts to deflect from this. So we're gonna stay on this for a bit because it's a major story. And then we do have other news, so stick around, we'll be right back. Even after so many cycles of going through this, like when a terrible thing will happen, like the gut punch of, oh my God, how are the right wing gonna talk about this? It still can hit you so hard. Anyway, they've got more distractions. Let's jump into this.
And again, we need to remember, you know, the side door. I'm not trying to point fingers. I don't know the exact facts at this moment, but from what I understand, a side door was unlocked. That seems to be a common pattern in many of these shootings, a side door. If we can lock the side doors and make sure that the schools are secure, hopefully we can avoid these tragedies going forward.
That is a former FBI agent that Fox News had on, Nicole Parker, who zeroes in on the true threat to kids' lives, side doors that weren't locked. If only the door had been locked and we secure the schools, kind of glossing over the important part there. I would say an important part of securing the schools is not having people running around with military weapons. If we just had locked doors, then we wouldn't be in the predicament we're in. So that's a fun distraction. We have another one for you. It isn't even about doors, not even about a physical thing. It's about the way people talk. Take a look at this.
And we can't disregard the defund police issue and the demonization of law enforcement, which changes how police police. We have to go back to assertive policing. You remember, Neil, we have the safest large city in America. Because we took all the guns off the street. We used stop, question, and frisk, and we made sure that criminals knew that if they carried a weapon, they were going to be found and they were going to go to jail. And we could do the same thing again, but it's not going to happen in this permissive attitude that we have right now in this country.
It's the door not being locked, and it's defund the police. Because after some people said defund the police, then the fear that people had that they might be caught would suddenly go away. This is basically a dumber version of the safe spaces argument. The idea being that because guns aren't allowed at schools, school shooters know they can go there and they won't be in any harm. That's an argument that has never made sense to me considering how many of them die. They know that they're likely to be shot. This shooter was shot and killed. Often, they get shot and killed, or they kill themselves. They know they're going to die, and it doesn't change their behavior in literally any way. God, we have the dumbest people in the world flooding the airwaves in the wake of shootings, River.
It is a real, I'm not even gonna talk about the locked door thing, because that's clearly just like a scapegoat for, we'll just shut children into, let's just turn everything into a private prison. I mean, it's worked really well for private prisons. So why not we just do that, you know? And as though private prisons are not full of violence that happens within them. That's a whole nother show, I feel like. But to have then this NYPD guy talking about Nashville and saying we need to bring back stop and frisk, that seemingly doesn't fit into the Second Amendment narrative that you can't, like, okay, you can have any gun you want, but also we need to police you and take all your guns away. These two things are opposing conversations, and it's all just distracting from the fact, again, that anyone in this country can get their hands on a high capacity rifle overnight. You can get it on credit online. You can get an AR-15 with a credit card. That is just essentially wrong because of exactly what you're saying, that people are losing it and going on these suicide missions essentially. And if you don't even have to wait for it, you're gonna do it. That's why we have like waiting periods, because people try to buy a thing when they are upset and then they have to think about it for longer than 24 hours.
The only thing I disagree with you on, River, is that I don't think he's being inconsistent. Yes, he does want to stop and frisk random people, but that does not mean he wants to seize their guns. You stop and frisk them, you find the gun, and then you say, cool gun, bro.
Yeah.
And then you high five and you go on about your day. Well, exactly. What do you do when you find the gun?
And we all know what that dog whistle is, which is if you are black, brown, you are not going to hang on to the gun that you potentially legally own.
Exactly.
You know, if you're stopped and frisked and you're trans, you probably have a gun and we're going to put you in jail.
100%. It's just sheer madness. But, and as many people are noting, the shooter blew through a locked door already in this particular case. It would be so stupid even if that hadn't been the case. But you know what gets you through a locked door? An assault rifle gets you through a locked door. The idea that schools are going to be hardened so that no one can even theoretically get in is madness. That's not how any of this works. Okay, Maxwell Frost had some great commentary. We're unfortunately, I think, not going to be able to make it to that, unfortunately. But it had some great commentary calling out right wingers for their support of the gun lobby. Let's actually jump to our B block whenever you're ready. We'll jump right into this.
I can't imagine you ever saying, bring me some of the boxes that we brought back from the White House. I'd like to look at them. Did you ever do that?
I would have the right to do that. There's nothing wrong with
it. But I know you. I don't think you would do it.
Well, I don't have a lot of time, but I would have the right to do that. Right. I would do that.
There'd be all right, let me move on.
So that is Sean Hannity like desperately trying to help Donald Trump when it comes to the classified document. Like, you wouldn't. Come on. You wouldn't. No, I would. I would. Okay, let's move on. Why I don't want to focus on this because you're making yourself look really bad here. And that sort of like willingness to quickly move on to protect someone was a real hallmark of this interview that Sean Hannity just had with Donald Trump. And it did not just extend to Donald Trump. There was a bit of defensiveness when it came to Ron DeSantis as well. Take a look at how they end one of their segments suspiciously quickly when Donald Trump pivots to a substantive attack against the governor of Florida.
And he's going to run, but he's getting crushed now in the polls because he did a little things like voting against Social Security, voting against Medicare. His numbers aren't very good on COVID.
More of my interview with former President Trump straight ahead.
Kill it. He's talking about the entitlements. We're trying to do that right now. Kevin McCarthy would love to cut them. Kill it. And so, look, there obviously the entire point of the segment is to protect Donald Trump, to let him spin his legal troubles however he wants. But they're also sort of hedging their bets with Ron DeSantis. They don't want Ron DeSantis's reputation to be hurt on true things like the fact that he was willing to cut these programs, particularly when the Republican Party in Congress right now is trying to do the same thing. River, what do you think?
That was a fun one. I especially loved that Medicare, have they been trying to take Social Security? And wow, if you spend any amount of time, I'm from Ohio and I still have family there. And oh boy, is that like the last frontier. They got abortion and they ain't done. They're gonna take that. And you know what? Hey, a broken clock is right twice a day. And Trump is right. That's bad. People are not gonna be happy. You cannot take their Social Security away and their Medicare away, and they are really trying. And that was, I did also love where he was like, I don't have the time to do this, but I have the right to do it. And that to me, that sums up, and that ultimately that is what I think people like about him so much is that thing where it's like, hey, I don't have the time to do it, but I have the right to do it. And that is like such an essential sort of Trumpist thought process, you know? It's very simple and straightforward, and that's what I truly think what people actually like about him. And of course there's the other top-down social racism, transphobia, generally like making a joke about everything all the time, but I really think that twofold thing is exactly what people like. Like I'm too busy, I work like all of you guys don't. But if I had the time, I would have the right to do it because he has the right to do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the issue. It's he's being offered like like a life jacket. Like, well, we're trying to protect you, buddy. We're trying to protect you. But he also has to assert that he can do whatever he wants. And he also, by the way, let's be real, he did it. So I don't think he wants to specifically lie in the interview. But like when someone's like, well, you didn't kill that guy. Oh, I'm way too busy to kill a guy, but I could. If I wanted to, I could strangle the life out of him. Like, that is such a weird way to talk to the media. But that's the direction he went into. And look, I want to give, I guess, a little bit of minor credit to Sean Hannity that he did bring up some of the more controversial social media posts of Donald Trump recently, including threatening memes and statements. Let's jump into that.
The baseball bat picture,
yeah,
next to Alvin Bragg, and you did take that down. And my only question is, why open yourself up to criticism?
You have to understand that when the story was put up, I put up a story. We didn't see pictures. We put up a story that was very exculpatory, very good story from the standpoint of what we're talking about. And they put up a picture of me. And you know where I was holding the baseball bat? It was at the White House. Make America, buy America, because I did a lot of buy America things. And this is a company that makes baseball bats. Then they put next to that picture, a picture of Alvin Bragg. I didn't do it, they did it. I guess the people that do the paper or somebody put pictures together, but I was holding a baseball bat in order to promote Made in America.
It wasn't on your post, the Truth Social?
No, no, what they did is we posted the story, but they had a picture up, but they then put a picture up, or the picture was put up that nobody noticed or saw, or that nobody thought was bad. These were two separate pictures. I will say this with death and destruction. I didn't say death and destruction. I said, I'm afraid.
Okay, so if he was being honest there, both of those defenses would be, I'll say dog food, because we have language requirements. Would you be surprised to find out that he's also lying? So here's the actual post. The post with him with a baseball bat. By the way, look, it is true to some extent to say he didn't put up the photo himself. He didn't Photoshop it or whatever. But it is the thumbnail for that story. When you post that story, like on Twitter, it uses the thumbnail from the story. So it is on his thing. He can see that instantly when he posts it, and he decided to keep it up. And even if not, notice that he says he didn't do it, I didn't do it, it was a bad, it was make America, buy America, whatever. But he didn't say, and it bothers me deeply that the National File would do this, that they're spreading these sorts of violent images, and it's never acceptable. And it bothers me so much that I accidentally did it. Nobody should be posting these things. You'll notice he doesn't say anything like that. He's only trying to claim that it wasn't him. He's fine with the thing happening. When it comes to death and destruction, he was asked, so you didn't say death and destruction? He said, no, no. Well, here it is. He did say death and destruction, and he did not say that he's afraid of it in the post. Now, he didn't specifically say, I want death and destruction. He's got the minimal neurons necessary to know that he can't make it that direct, but he is also lying there. And again, he does not make clear that these sorts of threats are never acceptable. Nobody should be threatening their political opponents. It's always just like sort of like throwing it out there, seeing how people react, and then moving on with his life. River, what do you think?
First of all, I would love a soundbite of him just saying, I'm afraid, over and over again. That would be great. And second, man, does he remind me so much of like kids I went to kindergarten with, and honestly myself. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, you know, when you're like a kid and you get caught with something and you're like, well, but you see, it was that, and like, it's the spin on this guy is just, it's like the game of life and you are taking a roll. Like, I just, it's incredible the way, I mean, because what's wild is he's actually accurate to a certain degree, but there's no substance to the way that he's presenting it. He's like kind of right that was just generated by the thing, but he's trying to play it as though he still agrees with it. You know, like, I don't want to come down on anything too hard because people probably like it. You know, the wrong people dislike it. So I'll keep it around as best I can. I'll spin these plates as much as I can.
Exactly. I'll
spin these Donald J. Trump collectible plates available now.
Yeah. Enter your email address and you'll get one free. And look, again, I guess it's good that Sean Hannity at least asked about it. But Fox has been grappling with these violent messages of the last few days. And like Stuart Varney was critical of Trump for it, but Rachel Campos Duffy was like, well, you know, we can make a list of all the things he said that I don't like, but people find it appealing. Yeah, but like you are supposed to be a person that has principles. You are supposed to be able to take a stand, whether you're a commentator on Fox or Donald Trump. If you didn't do it, if it was a total accident, then you should be way more angry, not at the critics, but at the person who I guess put up the thumbnail and made you accidentally a part of that. But he is not mad at them literally at all. Entire argument is absolute BS. Anyway, we need to take our second break. When we come back, we have students at a university in Texas suing the school president over banning a drag show, a charity drag show. We're gonna give you details on that and more after this. Okay, people in the chat reassuring me that in addition to wanting to see dog appearances, they do also want to see cat appearances. I apologize, I don't have a cat to provide for you, but we'll get Francesca back on the stream soon. Okay, that said, lots more to get to, so much news. Let's jump into this. A university in West Texas, Texas A&M, was gonna have a drag show. It was a charity event trying to raise money for the Trevor Project in particular. That unfortunately was canceled earlier this week by the university's president. And already the student organization has leaped into action suing over this. The lawsuit was filed by Spectrum WT, that's the student organization, against President Walter Wendler and other school leaders that alleges that Wendler is, quote, openly defying the Constitution. So here's a little bit from the lawsuit. Says, in a published edict, President Wendler barred a recognized student group, Spectrum WT, from exercising its clear First Amendment right to put on a PG-13 charity drag show at a campus event hall with the aim of raising funds for LGBTQ plus suicide prevention. President Wendler's edict canceling the student group's charity group drag show is textbook viewpoint discrimination. Of course, as a private citizen, President Wendler enjoys the First Amendment right to criticize expression he finds offensive, distasteful, or immoral. But as a public official, he cannot bar Spectrum WT and its members from exercising their First Amendment rights merely because he believes his personal opinions override the Constitution. And so as we're gonna get to, when we get to his comments, it is clearly him attempting to use his personal opinions and give like sort of a philosophical veneer to justify this banning. But to sort of, I guess, paraphrase some of his views, he says that drag shows, quote, discriminate against womanhood. He compared them to blackface and says there's no such thing as a harmless drag show. So I've heard those same arguments made all very recently in the last year or so from a number of people that have tried to, what's the term for it? It's when you use supposed empathy and compassion as a shield for your hatred. Concern trolling, I think, is the term. It's, oh, I'm not trying to stop the drag show. It's that I'm worried about women being discriminated against. That'll work, right? That makes me seem compassionate. And that's what he's doing here. He's just trying, either he hates drag shows, probably because he's been convinced to by right-wing propaganda, or he's trying to elevate himself on the national stage by being one of the right-wingers seen to be fighting back against these events. River, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's a twofer, John. I mean, why not? Why not get a little star power out of it? I mean, I do think it's very interesting now to conveniently hide your transphobia, which it's not very hidden. You know, transphobia and misogyny are essentially the same thing, as are, you know, homophobia and racism and misogyny. They're all wonderful bedfellows. And so when you can't, it's like, you know, it's like Spider-Man meme. It's not one versus the other. It's all within. And these students make a great point that you can have whatever personal belief that you want or value, but as a position as a public official, that cannot, you can't go on some, you know, a crusade to change these things. It is a First Amendment right to have these performances at public universities. It's not a private university. You can't do that. And I just want to point out two things, which is that we're essentially, and we have been for quite some time, living in like Weimar Germany, where trans and gender nonconforming queer people are the scapegoat of the nation right now.
Everything.
yeah, that is like what is center stage. I'm not saying that these other things, you know, police brutality, Black Lives Matter, they are all intertwined. But at this current particular moment, we're banning books. And you know, it's convenient that we never talked about the books that were banned. It was almost like Nazis just didn't want people to be literate, which is part of it. But they didn't want people to be literate about queer people. Like that is most of the books that were burned in Nazi Germany was deep, effective research about trans folks specifically, that we would be in a different place as a people right now today had those books not been burned. And so that is what's happening in America, is preventing us and people of color, Black people, indigenous folks, queer people from reading about each other, especially as children, and understanding one another and ourselves through that literature. Yeah. And I just want to point out that this, you know, saying it's PG-13, I don't think we need to be making those sort of considerations, because it reminds me of, I don't remember whether it was a congressman or a senator who said, you know, I can't define porn, I just know it when I see it, which is like this funny little thing. But when you really consider it, that means that person gets to decide what porn is and is not. And that's not what our country needs to be. Like, it has been that, is that certain elected and elevated officials get to decide what is and what isn't. And I think we're at this point right now where I actually think drag is dangerous. I think it affects people, but it is dangerous to the status quo. It is dangerous to the patriarchal, hierarchical, cis normative society that is being that is oppressing all of us every day, even people who fit within that that statement. You know, it is dangerous to the status quo. It's not dangerous to children.
I agree. And as many people are pointing out, there are cis women who perform in drag shows.
That's right.
And I only point that out because clearly President Wendler is so worried about discriminating against cis women that, oh my God, he accidentally did it. Now he's gonna have to backtrack because he seriously cares about them. In the same way that Republicans care about women's sports in high school and college as well. They seriously think about this.
They care about the quality of women's sports. And they also probably at the same time don't understand why they can't just comment on a lady's sweater every now and then. These people are full of it. They are absolutely full of it, and whatever is convenient and whatever fits their narrative, they're gonna use. People don't actually, I mean, the support of women's sports is almost, in terms of monetarily, materially, is almost non-existent in this country until there is a trans woman who wants to play. And then all of a sudden, we have to worry about, you know, the sanctity of women's sports. And women's sports has kept women from competition with men for years. And we could be doing that. We could all just be playing sports together. And ultimately, we're talking about kids and like kids who just want to be in community with each other and play sports with their friends, you know, like that's what this event is for, is for people to be in community with each other, which I would circle back to our first story, is the breaking up of community. And I don't just mean the LGBT community. I literally mean your neighbors, the people that you live with, that you shop for your groceries with, that you drive with. We are so broken apart and afraid of each other, and having community with each other is actually what prevents this violence. Because if you know someone, it's a lot harder to be cruel and violent to them.
Yeah, I think that's why so much of Fox News and right-wing media is designed to make you hate everyone who's not specifically like you along a bunch of demographic spectrums. Yeah, no, great commentary. I agree about community. Definitely. Yeah. Get the hell out of here. You know what you could do if you want to support women's sports? Go to them. How about that? How many of these right wingers? So I have season tickets to Angel City Football Club. I don't feel like I see a lot of conservative men. I'm not saying they're not, but it doesn't look like it's filled up with right wing conservative men who suddenly care about women's sports a ton. Anyway, that's one way to support it. And to when they're talking about it being the same as blackface, get all of the way the hell out of here. There have been a lot of dumb arguments that we've had to respond to. I'm not gonna give that any more respect than I already have by bringing it up. Okay, with that said, we do have to move on to our last topic for this hour. So why don't we do this? In more and more parts of the country, paying for rent, let alone affording to buy a house, is becoming hard. And that is for multiple different reasons, but we cannot ignore the massive influence of mega corporations buying up tons of real estate, whether to then sell or to provide for rental housing. And then because they have so much control, being able to artificially elevate the price. And we have an amazing example of that right now. There was this look into Blackstone, the Blackstone Group, major investing group, in particular, how they were affecting the housing and rental market in San Diego. So back in 2021, they purchased thousands of affordable housing units. Literally, I believe it was 66 apartment complexes at one time. And as renters moved out, and there can be very aggressive techniques designed to make people move out, rents in some of these units were increased between 43 and 64% in just 2 years. Which is really, really weird, because when they were doing all of this purchasing, one of the global co-heads of Blackstone Real Estate said, Blackstone has long been a big believer in San Diego with multiple investments across our real estate business. We look forward to ensuring that these properties continue to provide the community with a high quality rental option at a good value. They stressed good value. I guess they weren't super specific about who would be getting that good value, because it feels like they're probably getting a good value for their investment. For the people trying to rent in San Diego, not so much. They have now become one of the biggest real estate holders in all of San Diego County. Before this buying spree, they had $4.5 billion in assets there. And as a result of this now, people are being priced out. And it can be even worse than just the sheer economic effect. When you own so much of the housing, you don't have to maintain good standards because you're not in competition with the other apartment complexes that your corporation owns. And so the price goes up, the quality and the amenities go down. And that is what many people are experiencing in San Diego right now. River, what do you think?
I mean, welcome to the slumlords. You know, it's just very, it does not bode well, I don't think, for cities. Like, San Francisco being sort of the blueprint of this, and now moving on to San Diego, there's no competition for price. There's no competition for renters to be protected. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. This stuff is already going on where, you know, these corporations put out these letters to people that look very official, that they have no recourse for anything, you know, and people believe it, because why wouldn't they? Sometimes it's somebody's first time renting. Like, people are English as a second language, like, it's taking advantage of the common person. I mean, the idea that we have a middle class is a joke at this point. And working class people are less and less protected in this country in the most basic and common of ways. And your home, we should value renting as a home just as much as we elevate the homeowner in this country as though they have more power and control, and they do. And it's just baseline unfair, you know, that just because you are in a place to own your home does not make you a more valuable, you know, citizen, neighbor, person in this country. And so I'm not somebody that's like regulation, but there has to be some baseline regulation of corporations owning our homes. It's a nightmare to consider that literal corporations will own our towns. It's Pottersville, you know. It's like no exaggeration to say that one place owns everything, and it's exactly. You know, it's not our government, which I also don't totally agree with, but there's got to be some balance, you know.
Yeah, and it can be bad enough when you have a monopoly in all sorts of different products. They're almost always bad, but we're not talking about some sort of like optional thing that people can just decide, well, I guess I won't buy a yacht. This is housing. Right. This is as foundational as anything you spend money on. And so, yeah, I don't know exactly where you strike that balance, but I have a feeling where you shouldn't strike it is where it's at right now in San Diego. Okay, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour of our show. Thank you to everybody who's been watching along. There is much more to come in the aftermath, though, including who is the puffy Pope and what is he up to, as well as what the hell is going on Twitter. And maybe we can speculate a little bit about how much longer it'll actually last. So lots more to look forward to. So don't go anywhere. River and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.